Mark Collier here for Thomas Matters Radio. We're live podcasting from the Pancakes Picking and Politics breakfast at the Highlander Event Center at Fort Thomas Antique and Design Center in the Fort Thomas Plaza. That is located at 90 Alexandria Pike. They are part of the Fort Thomas Matters family. Fort Thomas Matters Radio is sponsored by Omega Processing Solutions. And I am joined today by State Senator Will Schroeder. Will, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the program. I just had a bunch of pancakes and coffee, so I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Good stuff. So it's the Saturday after the last week of the General Assembly. It's your first General Assembly since you've been elected as State Senator. I guess your first impressions, how did it go? Was it as it was expected? Surprises? Tell me how your first General Assembly went.
Well, you know, overall, I think it went really well. We have a great team down there, a great team of Republicans in the majority caucus in the Senate. And then, you know, also across the aisle with the Democrats, there's a lot of Democrats that were just really welcoming and kind of just inviting and just good people down there. And everyone's pretty dedicated to their job. So it was good.
So was it more Schoolhouse Rock or was it more House of Cards?
Well, it was not near as bad as House of Cards. You know, I think everyone down there is, you know, has really good intentions. They're, you know, I don't know if it was as elementary as Schoolhouse Rocks, but, you know, the people down there, I think, are, for the most part, good people that are dedicated to their job and their constituents. So
the weather kind of played a little bit of a factor in all of this. You guys still have 2 days of, I guess, some, you know, trading or of ideas. You have a veto process. You're coming back the 23rd and the 24th of this month to kind of finalize some deals.
Right. So the way it works is anything that is passed after, you know, anything we agree to after last week when we got out on Wednesday, we can still pass those on the 23rd and 24th. But if the governor vetoes those bills, then we're just out of luck. Whereas now when we come back, if he should veto anything in between, then we have an opportunity to override that veto. So we'll have to see. I don't, you know, there's nothing off the top of my head that I can think of that passed that I would see the governor having a problem with, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
But there are some, you know, some bills that are Northern Kentucky centric. The number one issue being heroin, which you've been a leader on, even as a freshman. I think people, you know, in the media throughout the state have kind of recognized you and Senator Chris McDaniel and Representative Dennis Keene as three people who are actually on the committee, which is where the latest heroin bill is right now. It's
right.
Heroin or House Bill 192.
Yep.
So I guess tell us where 192 is and what your role is on that committee.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I think, you know, having the background as assistant Commonwealth attorneys just coming from the prosecutor's office and prosecuting heroin, not just possession, but the trafficking and seeing that day after day, it really gave me a lot of credibility when I went down there to talk about this issue and share my experiences. So that certainly helped. And then being on judiciary, co-chair of judiciary. So, where it is now, we are during this next week going to have to get together with House members. You know, their big push was they want a needle exchange, which, you know, I talked to the Republican caucus about, and we educated ourselves about that. But, our big thing is we want tougher penalties for traffickers. And when I say tougher penalties, we just want to go back to the way the trafficking penalties were before this heroin epidemic exploded. And they've shown some reluctancy to do that. So hopefully this next week we'll be able to hash this out. It's a, you know, crucial bill for this area, but really for all of Kentucky. And I know people know the importance of it, and so we're going to work hard on it.
So I guess the Senate, if you want to generalize it in that way, has come pretty far on needle exchanges from where they were at the start of the session.
Yeah, you know, I think and even myself a year ago would have been completely opposed to needle exchange. But the more I looked into it, you know, up here we have hepatitis C rate is 24 times higher than the rest of the country, which is really alarming. And most of these individuals, the medical treatment they're going to be on is Medicaid. So that's you know, really a toll to the government just being on Medicaid, but also it's a great opportunity for individuals to get access to treatment. They're 5 to 25 times more likely to enter treatment because of the needle exchange when they... The other thing about needle exchange is in communities that have it, instead of, you know, users throwing the needles in the parking lots or in the park, they have an incentive to hold on to those and take them in and exchange them. So that's, you know, that it's a safety issue as well for me.
And plus, I mean, there was an article, I think it was in the Courier Journal, where there was a 96% increase of HIV, positive HIV, based upon dirty needles in an Indiana community. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's not that far from here.
No, it's not that far at all, and it's scary. And so I think to come back to your original question, you know, talking to my fellow Republicans down there, a lot of them have come around on it, and a lot of them feel that they could support it if we have those tougher penalties for traffickers. So it's really going to be up to the House whether or not they're willing to negotiate.
And you know, they expect, and I think you've said that before in a couple of pieces. I know you did one on Fort Thomas Matters. People expect you to come to the middle. I mean, that's where the majority of people are in the middle.
Well, you know, on important issues like this, I mean, we have to compromise. And I think people expect us to compromise. So, you know, we're willing to entertain needle exchange, and I would hope that they would be willing to entertain tougher penalties.
And one of the things I think that people need to know is just how serious you were about making heroin a priority. Talk about being the only nay vote, I mean, as a freshman senator on some of these resolutions.
Yeah, you know, that's happened, I guess at least four I can think of right now, where we have these resolutions. One in particular was naming Blood Song the official state play of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, you know. So Blood Song is a play about the Hatfields and the McCoys. And, you know, I just kind of found it to be ridiculous that we were talking about it and dealing with it on the Senate floor when we have so many pressing issues, not just heroin, but everything else. I mean, those kind of resolutions in my mind should really take a backseat to these important issues. And on the last night, we had a resolution that came back around that was naming the roads and bridges throughout the state. What had happened was started in the Senate, and I voted no against it then and explained my vote. And basically it was for that reason, you know, that we have this important issue of the heroin epidemic that we haven't resolved yet. And until we do, I was going to vote no. So that bill went to the House, where they added some amendments naming more bridges and roads after people. Then it came back to us. And so again, I was the single no vote. And, you know, it's interesting because I've gotten a lot of feedback from that and a lot of encouragement, which is good. You know, sometimes it is hard to be the only no vote, but I felt pretty good and confident in my decision down there.
And I think that's probably one of the advantages that you have as a freshman is it seems as though the longer that you're in Frankfort or Washington, D.C., you kind of forget, you know, the common sense, I guess, mindset to where regular people are. And, you know, that's a regular person statement, a common sense statement. Hey, let's not deal with the official play of Kentucky until we get heroin legislation in the books, which is not yet there yet, even still. So
yeah. Yep.
It's one of those things. So let's move on to a couple other issues that have kind of been percolating. The Kentucky teachers retirement system. There was a House-sponsored bill, $3.3 million, basically a bailout. Is that right?
Well, let me correct you because you said million, and it's actually
a billion.
It's billion.
Billion,
yeah,
$3.3 billion.
House Bill 4 would have given into the teachers' retirement system a $3.3 billion bond. Right now, their pension system is at 53%, just right around there. It's 53% funded, which might not sound good, but in the pension world, I guess that's actually pretty decent. The big concern for us is, you know, the non-teachers, but the state employees, their pension fund right now is in much worse shape. It's at 23% funding. So, you know, we had to consider, are we going to take a $3.3 billion bond out to add to this 53% fund while we still have a fund at 23% that we're not adding to? And then we're going to have to turn around and pay not only into the pension system still, but pay off that bond. You know, it's a calculated risk that the Senate was really concerned about. We've seen some cities, a couple cities in the United States, one being in California, one being in Michigan, I believe, that, you know, they tried this. They tried to gamble by bonding their way out of pension debt, and, you know, then they ended up declaring bankruptcy. So it's a risk. So what we ended up doing with that bill in the Senate was we took that out and we asked LRC to look into that issue and come up with more better solutions, other ways to fix that problem and shore up that liability there. And so we sent that version back to the House. They didn't like that. They wanted to look at the bonding again. And so I believe that one ended up in conference committee.
So that's obviously not been resolved either. You've got kind of 2 days, the 23rd and the 24th, to figure that out. I want to talk about two bills that have seemingly kind of gone away a little bit. Well, actually, I want to talk about CVG first.
Okay.
The CVG bill. That's not gone away. That's kind of been revived, resuscitated by Senator John Stickle. That would approve or expand the CVG board and give appointment power to different counties other than Kenton County. It was added, it was killed, and then added as an amendment onto another favorable bill. So I guess talk about where that is right now and where you stand on that.
Right. Well, where it is, as you said, you know, it was added as amendment. John Schickel, Boone County, added that. And, you know, it's interesting to see. I mean, I was aware of it before I went down there, but just how many things get done by adding them to amendments. And, I mean, in some ways, you could say that's really bad. It's kind of annoying, but also that's kind of part of the system and part of the negotiating, because if, you know, the House sends us a bill that's really valuable to them, if we want to negotiate and say, hey, we know this is valuable to you, but this is what we want in return, and the subject matter somehow lines up there pretty closely, then I think it's just kind of the way Frankfurt runs. But for me, you know, early on I had met with Kenton County's judge exec, Judge Knockelman, and, you know, he had proposed this. He was willing to give up some of those seats, and Campbell County would get one of those seats. And talked to Judge Pendry about it, and they were happy with that one. So for me, it wasn't really a tough issue, because it wasn't like our people wanted more than one. They were, you know, they were satisfied with one, and Kenton County was willing to give that up. So, yeah, you know, there's still some life in that bill, I guess.
So I guess obviously Campbell County getting some direction on that would be a good thing for the county. Involved is obviously Hamilton County would probably get a piece of that as well if they follow the auditor Adam Edelman's suggestion. So I mean,
there's kind of a difference there with voting members and non-voting members, and the way it had been, the advisory members who didn't get to vote, that's how Campbell County had been, and now we're actually going to have a seat at the table with a vote, so that's good. You know, Hamilton County, I think Judge Knockelman wanted to. He was considering giving them some voting authority, but I think there are some constitutional issues about being a resident, you know, in Kentucky to be on that board. So I think the way it currently is they're going to still be in that advisory role.
Two bills now that are kind of, I guess, dead. And you had a quote in, I think it was an Enquirer article where, and we're talking about the P3 funding bill for the Brent Spence Bridge and the smoking ban as well. There was, I guess, I don't know if it was an amendment or something was brought up kind of last second, and you had were quoted as saying it was a challenge to our majority and to our leadership, so we decided that, you know, as a caucus, we're going to vote it down. So I guess talk about, you know, those two in the context of, you know, how they died and that last minute, you know, push to get them in.
So first of all, kind of how, you know, how it started, I guess. This is a short session, you know, obviously 30-day session. So we're dealing with so many issues. And I think leadership, you know, if you were to ask them, they just felt that those two issues weren't, you know, really as pressing. They weren't really hearing from the members as much as they were hearing about heroin and some of the other things. So those really just never got brought for votes. And so what happened on that last day was the Democratic, the minority leader, Ray Jones, who's in charge of the Democrats, he had tried to file a discharge petition that would have forced the vote on the floor, but he actually filed it. Procedurally, it just didn't work out. So what we were actually voting on was whether or not that discharge petition should come to the floor. And according to, you know, the rules of the Senate and Mason's manual, which we follow, our leadership thought it was out of order. So that vote pretty much went down party line. And so my quote was about them challenging the ruling of our president and our leadership.
You have said that you're against, correct me if I'm wrong, against tolling and against a smoking ban. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, I said early on that I thought it was the federal government's responsibility. It's a federal bridge. And smoking, you know, I feel like we're seeing more and more people are making that decision on their own. They're voting with their feet, so to speak. And so the market is kind of controlling this issue, and it's harder and harder to name smoking restaurants, not bars, but restaurants in Campbell County, and Northern Kentucky. So I think this is an issue that as more people stop smoking and demand smoke-free restaurants, I know my wife and I, we don't go to restaurants that people smoke in, and it seems like when more and more restaurants open up in Campbell County and in Northern Kentucky, they're just going on their own to be smoke-free. So for me, it was a personal business decision that I really don't want the state making that. And it can be decided at the local level.
So free markets, good transition into the next bill, which is, I know, one that's near and dear to your heart. You could talk to me or anybody about this for a long time, the beer bill, which was House Bill 168. That would require Anheuser-Busch to sell or close two distributorships in Kentucky. What it also did was it required Rhein Ghost, who is owned by Rhein Geist in Hamilton County or Cincinnati, right across the river. Rhein Ghost was a way to distribute beer in Northern Kentucky. It required them to close or sell a distributorship as well. The president of Rhein Geist said in an Inquirer article, quote, "We just got screwed. This is why I hate government. We didn't get mentioned at all because it's too difficult to address the situation." So I guess, you know, talking about free markets with smoking ban, how do we translate that to this argument? And does it kind of transpose in the same way?
Right. Well, I guess, first of all, you know, you said this was near and dear to my heart. I'm not sure if it is. I'm more of a bourbon guy myself.
All right, me too.
But, no, you know, this was an interesting issue, and it's one that we could probably have a whole separate podcast on because it's so complex. And that is kind of how I started my thinking, was it was a free market problem and, you know, the government really shouldn't get involved. But the more I looked into it, basically what had happened was there was a loophole in the statute. And even the courts acknowledged that there was a loophole, and they said that it was up to the General Assembly to fix. And so what was happening was Anheuser and Rhein Geist were having an opportunity to do something that other industries in Kentucky, the bourbon industry and the wine industry, cannot do. We have a three-tier system in Kentucky. So you have the brewers, and then you have a separate individual that is the distributor, and then you have the retailers. And the way that is a system that's been in place since Prohibition. It was to protect people. And so the more I looked into it, you know, it can't be a free market in Kentucky because alcohol is such a regulated, restricted market. And that is the system we have set up. And if we want to go to a free market, what we'd have to do really is do away with the three-tier system. And so as I, you know, educated myself about this, in Owenton, Owensboro, what had happened was Anheuser came in there, and, you know, all the Kentucky craft beers that were on the shelves, well, the first thing Anheuser did was they want to distribute their own. You know, they don't want to distribute the craft breweries that they're in competition with. So, you know, there are studies done, and it was like over 50 brands that were immediately taken off the shelves. So that was, you know, hurting Kentucky businesses.
And to be clear, all the other craft brewers, I don't want to say all of them, but the majority of them were down pushing for this result. It seemed like Rheingeist has done well, and they were able to get a distributorship because they've done so well. But all the other smaller craft brewers wanted this legislation.
They did. And the Alcohol Beverage Control wanted it as well. They wanted it to be consistent across the board. And, you know, I guess going back to Rheingeist, you know, they actually, according to the definition in Kentucky of craft brewer, they would not even meet that because their volume is at a higher rate than our craft brewers here. And so his quote, you know, saying that we got screwed, I would agree they got screwed, but it wasn't by Frankfurt by any means. I think it was by their attorneys and by their site selection committee that thought it was a good idea to come in Kentucky when they knew that there's a pending issue with Anheuser-Busch. And the way I saw it, they took a gamble and they lost.
Right. I mean, it seems like from the outside looking in that, to your point, I mean, in business, you know, sometimes you take risks. This was a big risk. They knew this was out there. They knew they were going to have to jump this hurdle. It wasn't, you know, blindsiding them by any means. It didn't go their way.
It didn't go their way, you know, and I was somewhat sympathetic to them, but at the same time, you know, I don't think it's fair for them or Anheuser to get special privileges that we're not giving Kentucky companies.
One of the worst parts of that we rank as a state across the board is animal rights. There were a number of animal rights that were brought up during the session. House Bill 154, which dealt with dog fighting, was one that got national play because of the status of the state of Kentucky being the very last. Some of the, unfriendly amendments that were brought up that basically killed the bill were abortion amendments. Jeff Hoover brought up a four-legged animal amendment that Representative Joe Fisher also brought up, which made some national headlines because he only wanted it to include dogs and pigs and not squirrels. I've never been to a squirrel fight before, or I don't know how you would train that, but that was an unfriendly amendment. Stephen Rudy added one. Tommy Turner added that all animals would have to be registered under Obamacare, which is, it's kind of right. Funny. But
I think that might get the Amendment of the Year, Amendment of the Session awarded. You know, he was it was definitely a tongue-in-cheek amendment there. It was interesting. That was an interesting issue because I, going into the session, hadn't realized, I was hearing from people, hearing that Kentucky was one of the last states, and I was pretty surprised. Coming from the prosecutorial background where I knew that we could charge people. And so looking into it, what I found out is even though it's a felony right now to have dog fighting and allow dog fighting, what they wanted to extend that if you were, you know, raising animals just to dog fight, or you were somehow participating in maybe not actually being at the fight, but maybe providing a location or somehow. So it was an interesting issue. It was one that I didn't really dive too deep into because we just didn't end up.
It was one of those bills where you've got a lot of things in a short session and it just didn't make its way to the priority list.
It did. Well, and until they really come to the Senate, depending on what they are, if they're not one of those huge issues that I know for sure we're going to deal with, I usually wait until it lands in either my committee or I know it's coming to the Senate floor for a vote.
So the same type of thing where, you know, it was basically killed, like the smoking ban, the CVG. It's kind of like the CVG bill where it is right now, as the original bill was killed. It got added as an amendment by, I think it was...
CVG was John Schickel's.
CVG was John Schickel, and then it was added by Greg Stumbo as an amendment to an agriculture bill dealing with bees. So I think it passed the House. It's back to the Senate. Does that get to you then?
We'll see. I guess Paul Hornback, who is the chair of the Agriculture Committee, he's going to have to decide. I think that was his Bill, the one that dealt with the bees. Yeah. And so we'll have to see what he wants to do.
But obviously you don't want to see Kentucky be the last in the nation for animal welfare.
Right, no.
And I don't think anybody does.
No, yeah. So we'll have to see where that goes.
Lastly, another bill that got national play, and I think, you know, as we tie this all up together versus whether is this Schoolhouse Rock or is this House of Cards, a bill that was kind of brought up in a civics class. It was HB 236. It was high school students basically wanted to have an option to include peer elected students on a superintendent search committee. Got unanimous support, zoomed through the House, got to the Senate, and then we had Senator C.B. Embry wanted his transgender bill.
Bathroom locker room.
Bathroom bill added on to that, which, you know, was a contentious bill, and I think we all, you know, there's good reason for that. But, you know, he wanted his amendment, or he wanted his bill passed. It didn't get a vote. So he added his transgender bill onto the student-sponsored, basically, bill that zoomed through, and basically it got killed. So I guess, you know, is there a lesson for those students in there somewhere?
Well, I guess, you know, the lesson, maybe it's not a feel-good lesson, but it's, you know, that's politics of Frankfurt. You know, that's something that's been going on well before I was down there. And so many of these, as you've mentioned, you know, they people add amendments to all the time. And that was one. Yeah, so it definitely changed the course of their bill. And I feel bad for the students that worked on that. But, yeah, that's Frankfurt. It's a tough lesson.
And we're trying to change that. I know you are not cut from that same cloth. And obviously you can tell that by being the only nay vote. And that's not an easy thing to do as a freshman senator. So, Senator Will Schroeder, thanks so much for being here. Before we get out, I'm going to try to get you on record here. Who are you backing in the primary governor's race?
I think I knew where you were going with this one. Well, you know, I'll say as a Republican, I think we got a great slate of candidates. And I think all four of our gubernatorial candidates are in better shape than the Democrats have. And, you know, I think that says something, too, that we have four candidates and the Democrats have one. And I think it really shows the direction that the Commonwealth of Kentucky's headed. And I think it's good that, you know, we have this competition on our side of the aisle. You know, Chris McDaniel, great friend of mine, he's doing great down there, and he's been a big influence on the heroin bill. And, you know, but we have great candidates, and he's the lieutenant governor candidate for Jamie Comer. Great guy. But for now, I'm going to remain neutral.
You have figured out some political speak down in Frankfurt. I'll give you that. Will Schroeder, thanks so much for being with me on Fort Thomas Matters Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. Go Cats.
I am still living with your ghost, lonely and dreaming of the West Coast. I don't want to be your downtown.
For Thomas Matters Radio, we are back for segment two as we are about to unveil the fourth annual For Thomas Matters Best Business Bracket results from the nomination process that we had on ForThomasMatters.com, For Thomas Matters Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram. So those are going to be made available shortly, but first, a word to our sponsor, Omega Processing Solutions. Did you know that Omega is one of the nation's top-rated merchant processing companies, and it calls Fort Thomas home? Omega Processing Solutions is proud to sponsor with Fort Thomas Matters. We are proud to have them as our lead sponsor. If you're not sure if you want to change from your current processor, there's no pressure. We're talking about small businesses here. They have no contracts, no early termination fees. There's nothing to lose, and there's lots to gain. So you can give them a call at 859-442-8100, 859-442-8100, or visit them at omegap.com for more information. Last year's winner of the Fort Thomas Matters Best Business Bracket was Smitty's Barbershop. Smitty's was the benefactor of the termination of their long-term lease by their landlord at the Highland Building. They got a lot of ground support. People were upset that they were forced to leave. The landlord made that decision to remove them from that location because there's only two street access points in the Highland Building. He wanted to blow the wall out of Smitty's and make it a bigger space so that basically they could get more rent out of that location with having street access. They're still vacant there. Obviously, Smitty's has made the move to the Inverness District right across from 915 and Fit Philosophy. So it worked out to be a good thing for them, and the landlord is still sitting on an empty location. So I know they said they've had a lot of interest, but there's nothing in there as of yet. 2 years ago, Fit Philosophy, which was a new business at the time, came along, and they won the second annual Fort Thomas Matters Best Business Bracket. And then in the first year, the inaugural one, the Old Fort Pub, won the Fort Thomas Matters Best Business Bracket. Without further ado, we're going to start. There are eight teams in the Fort Thomas Matters BBB. All of these nominations came in via our social media platforms and on the website, and they were just counted up. We received 34 different businesses were nominated, which is outstanding. A lot of participation just in the nomination process, and the seating and the teams or the businesses that made the bracket were a result 100% of the nominations. This was not in any way like an NCAA tournament apples to apples thing. It was just based on how many nominations were received. So we're going to get into it and start with the number 8 seed. That will be Sarah Ann Photography. So Sarah Ann Photography is owned by Sarah Janicek. She received a lot of nominations on the Facebook page and in the comments and messages on Facebook. So Sarah Ann Photography fans can rejoice. They will play the number 1 seed on, it will occur next Thursday is when the first game will take place, and that will be on the Fort Thomas Matters Facebook page. The number 1 seed will be Fort Thomas Central. Fort Thomas Central is owned by Barb Thomas, and she has been in the bracket for the last 2 years, I believe. Obviously never made it, and she's got the number 1 seed this year based on how many nominations that that she received on different vehicles. The number 7 seed this year will be Fort Thomas Pizza. Fort Thomas Pizza made a deep run into the tournament last year. I think they got to the Final Four. They obviously were not able to pull it out, but congratulations to Fort Thomas Pizza. They will face off against fellow restaurant, the number 2 seed, Cobblestone Cafe. That will take place March 18th. That will be a first round game. The number 6 seed will be Omega Processing. Omega Processing is probably the biggest company sales-wise. Obviously, the schools and St. Elizabeth Hospital are two of the biggest employment-wise. But as far as Fortune 400, I think, is what they're on, they are a great stalwart and obviously a good addition to the field. They're going to face off against number 3 seed, the defending champ, Smitty's Barbershop, and that will take place March the 16th. So mark your calendars on there. And again, all these games will be, you'll be able to vote for them on the Fort Thomas Matters Facebook page. That way, we've tried it different ways and had voting take place on the website, and it just seems as though the majority of our fans are on the Facebook page. There's no perfect way to do it, but that way, you know, you can't log multiple votes and all that kind of thing. So it will take place on our Facebook page. And finally, to round out the eight best businesses in Fort Thomas bracket for this field, the number five seed, the 915, will face off against next door neighbor, Fit Philosophy. So Fit Philosophy will be the four seed, and you've got the 915 as the five. So to recap, the one seed, Fort Thomas Central, will go against number eight, Sarah Ann Photography. Number four seed, Fit Philosophy, will go against the 915. The number three seed, Smitty's Barbershop, will go against Omega Processing Solutions. The number two seed, Cobblestone Cafe, will go against Fort Thomas Pizza. And the voting is going to take place. Each game is going to be, you're going to be able to vote for 2 days. It will be pinned on our Facebook page for easy access. One team is going to be charged with having their fans like the status. The other team is going to be charged with having their fans share the status. So it's going to be a likes versus shares. Whoever gets the most engagements moves on, and for Water Tower Supremacy. So that will be the field. And that will do it for this version of Fort Thomas Matters Radio. For Will Schroeder and Omega Processing Solutions, thanks for listening. You can always find our archives on iTunes. Just search Fort Thomas Matters. If you have iOS 8 or higher, you can just click the podcast icon and search Fort Thomas Matters. Or you can always find our archive of all of our shows on Fort Thomas Matters Radio at fortthomasmatters.com/podbean.com. There's also a tab at fortthomasmatters.com if you click FTM Radio, you can find our archive that way as well. Again, thanks to Omega Processing Solutions. This is Mark Collier signing off. Got a thing.